This is Beyond Species, a podcast exploring issues around speciesism and the struggle to dismantle it. I'm Tofu Steve, and welcome to the episode. In this episode, we hear from EA. EA explains about the benefits of stepping away from the mainstream vegan movement. Instead, she focuses on local activism in her community, mainly with Plant the Power 614. EA explains how a focus on the health aspects of veganism and food accessibility doesn't necessarily mean compromising on animal ethics. She also sees a need for more exposure of the voices of Black, Indigenous and people of colour for the movement to really move forward. So if you want to start then by giving us an introduction to yourself and your activism.
Yes, well, I went vegan 3 years ago. It first started as a personal health journey for me. I'd actually never heard the word vegan before. But what happened is that my dad, he was diagnosed with cancer, stage 4 liver cancer. And that was the turning point for our whole family in terms of thinking critically about our health. And I came across a documentary called Forks Over Knives, which had a big impact on me because I'd never known that your diet makes a significant impact in your health, which should be common sense, but it's not something that, you know, mainstream education is really teaching people about. I knew that it had somewhat of an impact, but when I heard the fact that, the quote that had a big impact on me was the fact that genetics loads the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger. Mm-hmm. And so that was a turning point for me. I went plant-based overnight. I, you know, cut all of like the meat out of my diet. I would still eat a little bit of like dairy here and there and eggs because I wasn't completely convinced on the ethical aspect of it. The documentary goes into that somewhat, but not enough for it to have made a significant impact on me. But when I watched some slaughterhouse footage, specifically through a video called Dairy is Scary by Aaron Janus, that was the moment I went vegan immediately. Cut out all the eggs, all the dairy from my diet for ethical reasons, because I knew that these other animals, they don't deserve to suffer or be punished because of our appetite and our taste buds. Mm-hmm. I had that personal experience from my dad, seeing him suffer in the hospital and knowing that I don't want to cause suffering to any other living being, especially when we could live a lifestyle that's healthy and vibrant without exploiting other living beings. So at first, I was specifically just vegan for my own reasons. I never thought of, you know, changing anyone else or introducing the concepts to anyone else. It was very specifically a personal journey for myself alone. And then what happened was one of my friends that I met through, you know, Facebook groups, because I wanted to get to know other vegans in the community so that I had more support, invited me to Cleveland Veg Fest, where I'm from. And I met Philip Wolin, and he gave, you know, his very famous speech about why animals don't belong on the table. And the line that he said was that when you're a vegan, you're just adding one person to the movement, but the best way to make an impact is to become a vegan activist. So that was the start of my vegan activism journey, because I knew that I wanted to make an impact, you know, beyond myself. So the first thing that I started doing was just to join our local activism groups, which, you know, I'm very lucky. I live in an area where there are some options of activism groups to join. I did all of the common things that, you know, new first-time vegans do, which is follow all the influencers and celebrity vegans on social media. Mm-hmm. I got really into the YouTube channels by, you know, James Asby, Joey Carbstrong, Earthling Ed, and all of that. I did AV for a little bit, and I did some other groups like the SAVE movement, but more recently. And then I was also involved in Columbus Veg Community, which I really enjoy Columbus Veg Community from the aspect that it's about food and community. So it's run by one of my friends, Caitlin, and basically what she does is she organizes potlucks for the community. So it's for vegans, vegetarians, veg curious people, and it's a super, you know, open format, no judgment, where anybody can come and get materials to learn about the vegan lifestyle and also make friendships and have that accountability as well. And she also leads workshops where she brings in speakers to educate people about different topics related to veganism. And more recently, she's introduced like intersectional topics as well. And so that's basically the gist of what I've been doing. And then the other one that recently started back in September of last year is Plant the Power 614, where I'm on the board. My friend Ivory and her husband, they lead it, and it's specifically for people of color in who want to experience this plant-based lifestyle, go vegan, and also it's for, you know, social justice and, you know, food empowerment as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's interesting that, first of all, that what initially made you go vegan was health, you know, the concern for health, and then the Columbus Veg Kitchen is also kind of uses like the food aspect to kind of welcome people, to kind of get them to come to the potluck and things like that, but then brings in the ethics side of things, because it seems like in the mainstream vegan movement at the minute, there's this kind of thing about vegan for health doesn't matter. You can't be vegan for health. Actually, you can only be plant-based for health, or, you know, there's this kind of like an effort to almost leave health out of it and only focus on the ethical side of things, which I just think is quite unrealistic, because a lot of people come to veganism through health or a mix of obviously health, environment, and animal ethics.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you there, Steve. And it's the Columbus Veg Community, just to be clear.
Okay, Columbus Veg Community, yeah.
Yeah, not a problem. But yeah, if it wasn't for my health concerns, I don't think I would have ever made the transition. That's not to say that I didn't have compassion for other animals. It was because I think that there has to be a more intrinsic motivation before you can think of, you know, other beings outside of yourself. And, you know, having something so personal deeply impact me was that driving force that I needed. So for some people, they immediately have that connection to animals that is their driving force. But I think for other people, it could be the environment, or it could be their health that is a catalyst.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's, you know, different things that motivate people. So I think we need like different approaches, and we can just be more holistic in the way we do our activism rather than trying to find these niches, which it seems to have become a lot more recently. Okay, do you want to tell us more about then the project and the goals of Plant the Power 614?
Well, with Plant the Power 614, we started it specifically because there isn't any like vegan community or group of color here in Columbus where I live. There's pockets of where there's a lot of concentration of people who are living a plant-based lifestyle here, but there's no group where people are doing activism or coming together as a community with one common goal. And so I was looking for a community like this that didn't exist until Ivory started it. So it was kind of like a manifestation of things that a lot of us here have been thinking about. The goal is really to educate people on living a healthier lifestyle. It's about animal ethics, and it's also about the environment, because we're learning more and more about how the environment, environmental racism is playing a huge role on communities of color, specifically with the fact that these industries pollute, and they also, the slaughterhouses take advantage of the workers. Majority of them, you know, are brown and black folks, Hispanic and African American. Mm-hmm. And so what we want to do is we want to help people transition to a more ethical and more sustainable lifestyle, meanwhile empowering them with food choices and options, teaching them how to eat through cooking classes. And, you know, with the pandemic going on right now, we're doing Instagram live cooking classes. So what we really want to do is to introduce people, first of all, to this plant-based lifestyle, and then get them interested in the animal ethics as well.
So it's more like a community project then that's bringing together the different strands of veganism, but it's not necessarily like shouting out about veganism, like at the start anyway. Is that right?
Absolutely, you're right, because our goal really isn't to even, you know, give people the vegan label. Like a lot of people, you know, they have the vegan label, but it's not doing anything for the community. I think we're leading with an approach that's community-based, community-oriented, to get people in a space where they feel like they can go out and live this way and show others how to live this way, but we're not trying to focus on any form of labels.
Mm-hmm. And obviously, before the lockdown came about, I guess it was, with it being a local project, you were able to meet up with people and do the cooking tutorials that way.
Well, the plan was to always have them in person. So the group had just started getting off the ground at the time when the lockdown had come about, because we were planning to get more projects going in terms of, like, you know, booking meeting spaces and bring people together for these cooking classes. We hadn't done one yet before the lockdown started. The other projects we were working on, specifically when the lockdown just took place, was a book club. So we introduced people to Buy Any Greens Necessary by Tracy McWhorter. And that is a really great book because it talks about the diet, the lifestyle, and the animal ethics into detail, but specifically from a brown woman's perspective. And we recently discussed it actually with her, the author, Tracy McWhorter, you know, in a Zoom call, and we were still able to get, you know, close to like 20 participants to dive deep into that book and discuss it. So We're working on a variety of different things. Even with the lockdown going on, we're finding workarounds to get people engaged.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sounds great. What do you think then, in terms of bringing it all together, it's kind of like the core of it is food justice, I suppose. Are there other groups locally that you might want to work with? Because we're often trying to, in the movement anyway, talk about, oh, we should be working with, you know, other kind of groups that are working towards liberation but aren't necessarily vegan or anti-speciesist. So I just wondered if there was something if that was something that you were looking at in terms of kind of branching out or making different connections.
So in terms of like connecting, you know, our specific group to other social justice movements, that's not something that we specifically discussed, but I can absolutely see how, for example, our Plant the Power group could connect with an anti-racist group here locally. That's something that I'll definitely be bringing up. When it comes to food justice, we have several people who are members of our group who already have like really big projects where they do food distribution every weekend, and it'll be plant-based food for the community. So we've already connected with them and volunteer with them to help distribute plant-based foods to people who are in need.
So there's a lot to be said then for keeping it local and keeping it grassroots, I think, because there's also in the mainstream vegan movement, I think, this kind of push for like a united global movement. And I think part of the problem with that is that, of course, the movement for liberation can be united in a way, but made up of lots of different independent groups doing different things, but all generally aligned to the same values. But the problem seems to be, or one of the problems, I think, is that this kind of unity is becoming aligned under brand names such as the SAVE movement or Anonymous for the Voiceless and so on. And it's as if people think, okay, in order for us to be united, we need to unite under that. You know, we need to all be part of the same organization or whatever, strength in numbers and that kind of thing. So what's your thoughts on the kind of local versus global dynamic?
My thoughts on that are very similar to Lauren Ornelas. I don't believe in making a franchise of all of these different groups so that, you know, there's, like you said, there's SAVE, Anonymous for the Voiceless, there's PETA, and there's all these different things. And then you take that brand name and then you try to translate it to other states and other countries worldwide and do a very similar thing. Mm-hmm. I think it takes away from the creativity that you can have on a local level. And it also takes away from the resources that you can utilize, because with a lot of them, what ends up happening is there's a lot of red tape and bureaucracy that ends up happening. And then that breeds discontentment among the members when they can't make independent choices that are the best to serve their community. Mm. Our communities are so unique and we really need to pull from them. You know, I can specifically speak of my friendship group. You know, they are in the sorority life. They have a lot of sorority sisters who, some of them are plant-based, some of them are not, but they can draw from their experiences and utilize them as resources because, you know, we have one friend who is into, you know, the gardening space and urban gardening and development. And, you know, if we're under the umbrella of a national franchise or organization, we just can't be creative and use all of our contacts the same way we would as when we're independent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's that kind of freedom to be a bit more creative and to, you know, utilize all the skills of the people involved, really, instead of that top-down approach that says, this is the new campaign. Everyone, you need to do these certain actions to fit in with the campaign or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. And you've been growing your own food.
Yes. So I started that project, as many people have, during this lockdown of, you know, just wanted to experiment with, you know, sprouting some seeds from scratch because I've never done that before. So it's been, the project started off really great, but I have to admit lately it has not been going so well. But I have gardened in the past, I think the past 2 years, this will be my third year. So I'm going to get some new seedlings pretty soon to plant them directly in the garden because not all of the sprouts that I started survived.
Okay, fair enough. So yeah, I think people growing their own food is actually such a powerful thing because I think we've become so disconnected from that whole process. You know, I was watching a video by Mexi recently. Yeah, she was explaining how we're so in the Western world, I guess, anyway, mm-hmm. we're so disconnected from the ecosystem because we live in the house, which blocks out anything kind of natural. And then to get our food, we go to the store, which other people have picked and supplied and brought to us. And you pick up that, you know, that food from the store, and you don't generate your own kind of power in any way. So you just like have the electricity like piped in or whatever. So we don't have any kind of control or agency really over this important stuff. And we're completely disconnected from the whole ecosystem. So there must be something really just kind of maybe humbling and also just inspiring about growing your own food and giving yourself kind of nourishment from that.
There really is. And I take so much pride every year when I get to harvest my own vegetables from my garden, and I get to eat a meal that's like garden to table, it feels extremely empowering. It feels like you're taking back some of that access to nature that is supposed to be so natural to us as human beings. I think that a part of us is being connected to the land and the soil, and you know, that experience of seeing a seed, you know, sprout into a full vegetable, that whole process and watching it every single day is really, it's inspirational. It's something that, you know, that you're part of nature and nature is a part of us. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we all need to at least try once in our lifetime, because I know with, you know, the example from Mexi, where we're all in these like boxes, right? You just go from one box to the other box. You're in a car commuting or a bus commuting. Mm-hmm. We don't really touch the soil and get immersed in nature as we should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And I suppose there's another angle to it as well, which is that thing about feeding yourself and your community if you have enough to go around. Because there's something about, I think, governments and corporations having the power to control the food supply, which is can be used against you. You know, if I'm sure in countries that have had kind of civil wars or whatever, that the people who control the food supply are, and the water and things like that, are, it's such a way to be able to kind of get leverage or to get what you want. So I suppose there's something there in terms of food justice about people being able to be self-sufficient, really.
Absolutely. I think that they have throughout history consistently used food as a way to control people. And we see it more apparent now more than ever. And I think that one of the reasons why a lot of people have taken to home gardening during lockdown is these fears of not being able to feed ourselves, as people who are not plant-based are hearing about the closing of all of these factories, meat processing plants. And those of us who are plant-based, you know, we do have concerns about the field workers, and are they going to be taken care of appropriately? Are they going to continue the supply chain? So I think that there is an interest in taking back our power and producing our own fruits and vegetables so that we can sustain ourselves, even if we can't, you know, make our whole meal start to finish, you know, garden to table. We can have things here and there that provide us some comfort, that knowing that we do have the ability to provide something for ourselves instead of completely relying on our corrupted food system.
What do you think then are some of the issues within the vegan or animal rights movement at the moment?
I would say the main issue is that when people get introduced to the animal rights movement, it's a lot of the time through documentaries. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, because that's how I got introduced into it as well. But what people lack is an understanding of the history and the roots of the animal rights movement. So what ends up happening is that people gravitate towards, you know, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube to find their inspiration. And when that happens, you end up running into people who are quote unquote saviors of the movement and have a lot of fans and followers. Mm-hmm. And you kind of get immersed into thinking like that's the way to do activism. These people are reaching so many people because they have so many fans and followers. But what ends up happening is like you're worshiping a person and you're giving that person control over the entire movement. And then you're focusing less on the animals that you wanted to liberate in the first place. So, you know, from my perspective, when people first get introduced into the animal rights movement, they're joining like the white animal rights movement, because there isn't an overarching intersectional approach. You start to see things like for the animals only. And when you've come into the movement seeing, you know, slaughterhouse footage, that idea resonates with you. In your mind, you're thinking, yes, I'm for the animals because I don't want to see any other living beings get slaughtered for, you know, my appetite and my taste buds. And I want to liberate all the animals. But then what you end up finding out is The people who are leading this movement, unfortunately, they don't really speak about other issues that are intertangled with animal rights, which are, you know, racism, homophobia, sexism. There's just so many, you know, different angles that they're missing, and they're only speaking specifically about the animals, whereas we need to take a more holistic approach and advocate for rights for every individual so that those people can feel empowered to join the movement. And they don't necessarily have to join the movement per se. When we're talking about vegan and animal rights movement working with other movements, it's more of a collaboration and a partnership. I think of it as puzzle pieces. Not everyone necessarily has to join the vegan movement, but they have to collaborate with us. And that's how I think we're going to make the most amount of change. So unfortunately, what we end up seeing a lot is, you know, women, especially, who make up over 80% of the movement, from what I've heard, the men in the movement are speaking about there should be an intersection between feminism and animal rights. And I can absolutely agree with that. But then, you know, we're working on advocacy to liberate female animals, but I think we should be talking broader about, you know, how male animals are also exploited in the animal agriculture industry. But what ends up happening is people specifically, you know, narrow into, you know, the female reproductive system and say things like, well, if you're a female, you have to be a vegan because these two issues overlap. And then they're advocating, for example, cows get brought up a lot. So you're, on one hand, they're advocating for cows, but then they're disrespecting women. We're seeing so many cases of women who've had their rights violated and their consent violated by prominent men in the movement. And we've heard so many, you know, animal rights Me Too stories. And I don't think that it's being addressed hardly at all. We're seeing so much retaliation against people who bring up their stories, especially, you know, the more recent ones. It seems like day after day, there's, you know, a new allegation, because people have it narrowed into the fact that if we're going to be liberating animals, humans are also animals, and we need to focus not only on animal rights, but on human animal rights as well.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. With the kind of white male vegan thing, I think that's definitely a problem. And I think it's probably something to do with social media as well, that, like you say, when people get onto social media and start looking for the vegan stuff, mm-hmm. these are the people that they come across. And there's probably something to do with algorithms, or, you know, this technology has been designed to basically, well, to sell stuff to people by presenting people that fit a certain mold. And so I think there's probably a lot of work going on, grassroots work, that you don't see on social media, because, you know, these groups don't need to be on social media necessarily, because they're working in the local community, or the people following them on their pages are, you know, the people who are involved in the projects and so on in that area. But these people with the big followings, it's just the same old. It's basically just a reflection of the status quo. There's nothing liberatory about it to have. They're not trying to address systemic issues in any way. They're literally just wanting to replace the burgers at KFC with plant-based burgers. That's the only change they want in the world.
That's exactly what it is. And on top of that, they're not seeing the political side of things. You know, food is political, and we can't just replace, you know, the cow burger with the plant-based burger and that be the solution to all the problems, because the food distribution system is not set up to provide for the needs of people of color the way it currently is.
What kind of changes do you think would be needed then to make that, to improve that, or to change that?
I think it's going to take a governmental response. You know, a mutual contact of ours, Connie Spence, she's talked a lot about lobbying. And what I think mm-hmm. needs to be done is we need to completely change the food pyramid. Well, they've changed it now to like the food plate. And we need to take you know, meat and dairy off of there. And we need to, you know, tell people that these foods are, you know, a cancer risk. Mm. And I think that that's going to take a lot of effort in terms of, instead of people, you know, donating to these quote unquote vegan saviors, we need to donate to fund lobbying groups. If everybody, you know, shifted their donations from, you know, sending, you know, this small group of very prominent activists to Bali on vacation to do activism, and instead gave that money towards vegan lobbying groups, we could definitely make huge changes in, you know, getting the USDA guidelines restructured to show people the type of foods that they need to be eating. If you're familiar with Dr. Milton Mills, he's worked on a lot of advocacy in the governmental space to get people off of dairy, because African Americans and people of color in general have problems processing dairy. And because it's part of the guidelines, it's part of the checkoff program that the US government has to sponsor the dairy industry for financial benefit. You know, people are being recommended a diet that includes dairy when it's detrimental to their health. So if we could, you know, get dairy off of the recommendations, that's going to save a lot of people of color and people in general, because dairy is a very inflammatory substance. It's not good for human health. It's designed specifically, you know, to raise a baby cow from infancy to you know, the weaning phase. So I think that we're going to see the majority of the progress when we can change the government's approach to food. And I guess on another level, outside of the government, it would just be getting communities to work together to get access to fresh and healthy foods. Mm-hmm. Like I was talking about earlier on, Plant the Power 614, we're partnered up with groups that, you know, do food donation of plant-based food to the community. So I think that because the government response is going to be way into the future, there's also things that we could do immediately to make an impact in our community, like urban gardening and teaching people how to sprout seeds and plant seeds, and even just starting something as small as like a herb garden or tomato plants that could be easily grown when you have an apartment. Are things that we could start doing in the community. But people need access to fresh, healthy foods and options other than just fast food joints.
That's the thing that these vegan celebrities aren't doing, is they're not creating communities. They're not really doing community work to create alternatives. They're just really creating clickbait videos that they put out on social media. And then some of them are sponsored by like venture capitalists. Okay, plant-based venture capitalist, but it's still, the goal is to sell stuff like burgers and probably eventually like lab meat and stuff like that. You know, there's no real drive for them to get involved at a community level. Like, and I think it's also this thing about, it's kind of a capitalist mindset as well, is that it's about individuals. You know, these people, these vegan celebs are just kind of high achieving individuals, which is what capitalism wants us to think like. It wants us to kind of remain individual, not get involved with our neighbors, so that we can just buy stuff. If we need anything done, we'll just order it, you know, and someone will deliver it to our door and so on. And they're playing right into that, you know, and they're making loads of money from it. So they're not offering us like really solid alternatives. I don't think at all.
I can absolutely agree with that. I think that once people understand that capitalism is a system that's just, it's all about like a winner takes all mentality. It's not about building, you know, cooperative systems with, you know, a lateral structure where everybody gets to have a voice and participate and, you know, make the decisions that are going to be best for individuals on a community basis. Nothing's going to really change unless we as the vegan community start to pull back on the saviorism and start supporting our local activists. Mm. I mean, I've seen this happen firsthand where, you know, we have a local group that we're trying to gain momentum, and then they want to bring in, you know, a famous vegan celebrity to, you know, get people to come and participate in the activism. And yes, they will come and they'll attract a huge audience, but it's like people didn't come to liberate animals. They came specifically to meet that one person, but they won't be there week after week after week. So you haven't improved your community or done anything major when you're inviting these vegan celebrities, you know, to your hometown.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. So I suppose one of the problems with what could be called white veganism is that some of these kind of celebrity folk that we've been talking about who don't advocate for challenging other oppressions are actually coming from a place of real privilege that they're also not really trying to unpack themselves. And there's kind of not, I don't think there's a great understanding of what it must be like to deal with your own oppression whilst also fighting for the justice of others. So, you know, that intersection of like being vegan and also having to battle your own oppression is something that's maybe not that common an experience for a lot of people in the kind of mainstream vegan community. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's such an uphill battle in a way, because I think that what people fail to realize is that marginalized people actually make up the majority of this movement. The people at the top who are representing the movement, you know, are mainly white and privileged, but activism for other animals has been happening by communities of color since, you know, as soon as people could advocate for animals, basically, since the beginning of time. So you'll see that indigenous cultures have, you know, cared significantly about other beings and their welfare and been anti-exploitation, and the Black community as well. You know, we've heard about MOVE and the MOVE 9, and that started way back in the 80s. So it's a failure to recognize that people of color are just as compassionate as white people. And we've been doing this work for a very long time without getting the recognition for it. Mm-hmm. And it's painful to see that our efforts aren't being recognized because they're not marketable. It's not like you'll see, you know, people of color on mainstream television talking about these topics. You'll see, in the United States, we don't really see many vegan celebrities on television to begin with, but I do see it happening more often in the UK. But who are they inviting to speak? They're inviting, you know, James Aspie and Joey Carbstrong. But I'm not as familiar with the movement in the UK, but I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, indigenous and, you know, brown and other ethnicities of activists who are doing a lot of the work on the ground, but they aren't being visible. They aren't being shown in any prominent fashion. And I think that because of that, it's demoralizing for people of color who want to get involved in this movement. I think for me, I had to overcome it because I'm used to it in a way. I'm Nigerian, so I've been an immigrant in this country, in the United States, where I live as an outsider for as long as I can imagine. So joining another group, being the outsider, wasn't, you know, a far stretch for me, you could say. Mm-hmm. But for a lot of African Americans who feel like they've been left out from so many aspects of society, it's not attractive to want to join the animal rights movement because you're seeing it as another space where your voice isn't being heard, your ideas aren't being listened to, and people don't care about your issues. They don't care about the brutalization of brown and black bodies. They don't care about the police violence. They only care about one issue, which is other animals, and they're not tying in those oppressions. So what I think is a great thing that is happening is that you're seeing a lot of brown and black people just like Planet the Power 614 is doing, branching off on our own and becoming our own voices for our own community to bring this message forth and to live this ethical way of life, you know, in and of ourselves without being part of this larger, you know, vegan movement. So I think that it's a challenge on one hand to, you know, join the vegan movement when you're not seeing yourself being recognized and the struggles that you're going through being recognized. But at the same time, there's opportunity and there's hope in the fact that there's so many of us, like I said it before, numbers wise, people of color have been doing this since the beginning of time. So we're seeing the white faces on, you know, social media and on television, but what's happening in reality is that we are living this lifestyle. We're just not being recognized for it.
Yeah. And I think that comes back again to that whole thing about the status quo. You know, both mainstream media and social media is going to show you like a reflection of our current society. It's not really going to show you the countercultural, you know, social justice stuff that's going on, because that's not what these corporates and governments want you to see. They want you to see like the shiny, happy people, you know, with the smoothie bowls and stuff like that, because that's what's going to sell products. It's not going to be the people who are actually doing something radically different.
You're absolutely right. It's all about marketability. And the sad part is like this whole Instagram culture of like beautiful food pictures. For some people, they feel like they can't even go vegan or plant-based because they think that that's the way that we eat when it's not. We eat, you know, rice and beans and potatoes and legumes and all of the sorts of healthy foods that are, you know, accessible in most places. I'm not going to say like everywhere because, you know, everybody has a unique situation, but those foods, as marketable as it is, does limit some people from, you know, wanting to change their lifestyle.
Yeah, I guess it can seem kind of quite kind of exclusive. You've got to buy like certain like fancy hard to get fruits and things like that. Whereas actually like a lot of the stuff like unprocessed food anyway is going to be vegan, and a lot of like stuff in tins and stuff is going to be vegan as well. Like your local supermarket will have plenty of like food. It's just that you've got to like not try and follow those expectations of what kind of social media has set up for you, you know?
Absolutely.
What do you think then? I know you and I have chatted about this before, kind of more generally, the vegan identity or the vegan term can be a barrier because it's creating these kind of expectations or stereotypes, maybe, you know, that the minute you mention you're a vegan to someone, they kind of assume they know what you're about, but it's always confusing because vegan means something different to everyone. So like some people say to me, oh, can you eat chocolate? And some people still say to me stuff like, can you eat eggs? Well, no. Like, I thought that would be obvious by now, but, you know, people have just different understandings. And it kind of leads you down that whole thing again about like talking about food and stuff. Now, obviously, the way you and I, what you and I have been speaking about today is that the importance of healthy, accessible food, but it can also get us like taken down that route of, oh, well, can you eat this? Can you eat that? And vegan purity and all that kind of thing. Do you think there's, or what do you think some of the problems are, or how can we overcome these issues about proclaiming the vegan identity?
I think first and foremost, I think that people that are using the term, you know, vegan as a label and as an identity, they just need to pull back on it a little bit. Like, there's this whole thing about, we have to keep this word pure. We have to own this term. This is the only term for the animals. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, there's the anti-racist movement and they have, you know, an identity. And then there's the feminist movement and they have an identity. But then they're saying like, okay, so vegan is our identity and it's the only way that we can advocate for animals. I think we need to ditch labels entirely, to be honest. I think the only reason I've kind of stuck with the term vegan is just because it's easily identifiable for other people to get a gist of, you know, what I believe and what I'm about. But overall, I think that we should be moving more in a direction of anti-speciesism. The only reason why I haven't, you know, used that term more prominently in my activism is because I think a lot of people haven't been educated on it and don't really know what it means. But I'm trying to do the work to use the term anti-speciesist more and more often, because I think that it's a term that is specifically about the oppression of other animals. And it's, and I think that maybe that'll help click for other people that when you're eating things like eggs and dairy and fish, you are oppressing those other living beings. It's a form of discrimination, like racism and sexism and misogyny and all of the rest, but it's so invisible because we're so conditioned to it. I think that the way that we move on from this vegan identity and vegan label is to choose new terminology. I don't even think it necessarily needs to be consistent. It just needs to be accurately describing what our values are. I think that because there already is so many plant-based and vegan movements, I think working together is more of like we're all pieces of the puzzle, filling out a bigger picture. We don't necessarily need to do the exact same things, but we all interconnect and overlap each other. But I don't think that we need to have one specific umbrella term to describe our movement. People are accustomed to that, I think, because it's a place of security. And but if you meet one vegan one day and another vegan another day, you're going to find out that you're completely different and distinct individuals. Like, you're not going to get along with everybody in the vegan movement. You're not going to get along with anyone in any other specific movement. So I don't see why we are like guarding this term like life and like a life or death matter. We need to move on and start being creative. Like, if you're familiar with the author Afko, she talks about, you know, like multidimensional liberation and, you know, consistent anti-oppression. I think that we could lean into philosophy and we could lean into critical thinking and come up with new terminology that, like I said before, it doesn't have to be a consistent across the board. It just needs to be accurate. So I think that once we let go of our focus on, okay, we have to, you know, be pure and strict, because if we don't, we're going to mislead people and people are going to think, you know, one way or the other about our movement. I think that that's holding us back, because that's one of the reasons why the vegan movement hasn't been collaborating with like the anti-racist movement, with the feminist movement, and with many of the other movements out there across the board, because we're like, well, they exploit other animals and they do this or that. Like, we're already like passing judgment on all these other people instead of finding out the commonality and ways that we already have things that we're, you know, in common. Specifically, like the vegan movement is for consent for animals, right? We don't want to violate the rights of other animals to consent to what's happening to them. Well, the other movements, social justice movements, believe in the same thing as well. If we partner with them, they're going to find out that they're going to want to join our movement. So they're going to want to eat plant-based and they're going to want to stop. They're going to want to be consistent and stop exploitation in the other areas of our life once, you know, we work with them. I think that what's holding us back is that we want it to be a one-way street. We're like, well, you know, go vegan and then we will, you know, join your feminist movement. We'll go vegan and then we'll join your anti-racist movement, and go vegan and then we'll join, you know, your LGBTQ, you know, allyship or movement, or, you know, whatever that looks like. We'll join it after you do this thing for us. And it's not the way any partnership works. It has to be on both ends. But I think what holds vegans back is we have this passion and this concern for animals because of the numbers. Statistics wise, you know, fish are the most exploited beings on this planet there, and sea life in general, and the numbers are in the trillions. So we're so passionate about how can we stop this massive massacre from happening as quickly as possible. Well, the way it's going to happen is not going to be to force people to do something. People are going to want to do something once you work with them. So instead of like always being the initiators and like forcing people to see our side of things, I think we first need to see the other movement's side of things and then bring them into our movement slowly by understanding their issues as well.
Yeah, that's a really good point you make on looking for the commonalities, and especially the one about consent is so important. So instead of talking to these other groups about necessarily veganism, we could be talking about the issue of consent, and that they're obviously going to agree with what we're saying, and then we're just going to bring non-human animals into that conversation, you know?
Absolutely. I think that's a starting point, you know, finding all the areas of commonality, because every social justice movement has something in common, because we're all for equality, we're all for liberation, and we're all for, you know, peace and justice and all of those, you know, like catchphrases and terms that apply to both humans and non-humans alike. So when we talk about issues that they're passionate about, and then, you know, loop that in with, you know, animal rights and animal advocacy, they're going to start to see our side of things as well. But we can't, you know, force them to see our side, and then we'll see your side afterwards.
What do you think the future looks like for your activism then?
That's a great question. So what I see myself doing in the future really is working more with, you know, Plant the Power 614. I think that Columbus, Ohio, where I live specifically, is an up-and-coming, you know, metropolis-type area, and there's so many people of color here who would love to, you know, join this type of a lifestyle. And what I see us doing is, in the future, we're planning to host a veg fest, like a soul food veg fest, with many, you know, Black-owned vegan businesses. And that's kind of been put on hold because of the pandemic we're going through right now. But, you know, that's going to eventually come to an end. And I see myself doing a lot of work with just growing this specific community as much as possible. A lot of it has to do with health, because, you know, we're hearing, especially with this pandemic, that people of color are being affected the most, and they have the least access to the right types of food to eat, which leads to, you know, those pre-existing conditions such as, you know, cancer, heart disease, and diabetes. So a lot of our work is going to be focused on the health aspect of things, you know, because it caters specifically to our community. And I think once people start to feel the difference personally from eating this way and living this way, they're going to become interested in the animal ethics aspect as well. I would love to host more you know, book discussions to bring in the animal ethics issues. And eventually my goal would be as well to start my own podcast and, you know, do a little bit more writing, maybe like either a Medium or start a blog. I really want to get into the education angle of things and make it known that there are a lot of people of color who are thinking holistically about this issue of total liberation.